bought me a ring, falling asleep, the sound of your breathing, wide, wide eyes like, this is my house, this is my life now, this is my spouse, glory be, glory to you, glory to me, this is the sound of holy love, holding your...
Honey, would you find it seductive if I flashed my iridescent throat patch?
Scary.
Some of you insiders might know that what that is referring to, this is a pretty sick reference I just made, is to Our Planet, the David Attenborough documentary that's on Netflix.
Awesome.
And I showed Mary a little clip that y'all should absolutely look up right now if you haven't seen it already, of birds of paradise doing mating dances.
Some so beautiful and so bright and stunning, and some of them real scary.
Really, really, really disturbing. You know, like, it looks like a, he really does look like a, a supernatural, like, spinning black sombrero with, like, tassels coming off of his. It doesn't look like an animal.
It looks scary. It reminds me of the Mothman prophecies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It kind of does. It really, like, I've never seen a bird, like, shapeshift that way.
Really
what
scary.
Am I looking at?
Yeah.
But the, I mean, and the female bird is, like, I almost said the woman bird. The woman bird is up on a branch, you know, a bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, really funny. It. Yeah.
And she's, like, looking down and watching this, and I wonder what she's thinking. Is she like, oh, fuck yeah.
Do they like it, or is it like you know, straight culture where I feel like women, like, tolerate a lot?
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Where and they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I love that.
Or maybe
oh,
maybe
you have such big muscles.
But at one point, David Attenborough is like, okay, and now she's going to go deliberate.
Yeah, she's
like,
going to
Think about it. I wonder how many mating dances she's seen.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know. The last guys had a little bit more, like, the spit had a little bit more, like, speed to the rotation, velocity. Like, his tassels were a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
His iridescent throat patch shone a little bit more brilliantly. But, yeah, that's, you know, it's a lost art. It's a lost art. I would like to see more mating dances and human interactions. I'm sorry. I just feel like there should be more mating displays. There was one bird that it showed at the beginning of this clip who was like, they stick both of their wings up and they just kind of like whip their head to the
left
side. Oh,
yeah. I like
and then
those
they
ones.
They whip their head to the right side. Yeah.
Yes. And it also seems like they tuck their beak, so they also look like not headed.
Yes,
it's
right.
It's cool. It's really cool.
I just wonder if the woman bird is like, oh my God, I'm so horny right now. Or like, do you think that ever, what do the gay ones just do, like, sombrero spins?
I know. I want to know, like, queer bird culture.
Yes. David Attenborough, call us.
Call the hotline.
Call the Manic Episodes hotline. Great segue, honey. Well, actually, it wasn't a great segue because we're not ready for that part yet. But
sorry.
It was a nice try, honey.
Sorry.
Do you want to start with our lies?
Yes.
Okay, will you tell yours first?
Yes, I will.
Your first one?
Okay, I'm really excited. Grow up, won't you?
Uh-uh.
Or will you?
Mm.
Meg P. invented a growth-stunting pharmaceutical that combines all your favorite things, honey.
Okay.
Chocolate, mm-hmm. living forever, paying attention to small bugs.
Love all of those things.
And I'm not going to elaborate because it's patent pending, but do know that if you take it, you are at risk for reverse eyebrow growth.
Oh, like they fall out or no, they grow inside? Oh, damn, honey. Thank you for the shout out to small bugs, though. We don't give them enough attention.
I knew you were going to like it.
Okay. It can be pretty stressful to try to check everyone off your list for the holidays.
That's true.
Yeah. Right? Let's face it. Gift giving isn't always puppies and rainbows. Mm-hmm. So Madison F. has come up with a way to take some of the guesswork out of the process with a delightful and delicious treat. For that person who is just impossible to shop for, consider stuffing their stocking with Madison F.'s special delivery service. For a nominal fee, Madison F. will take tubs of freshly cooked cornbread stuffing and fill your loved one's stocking to the brim. And if they don't have a stocking, maybe because they don't celebrate Christmas, that's okay. Madison F. will buy some ladies' pantyhose and fill it with lobs of hot stuffing.
Why?
I don't know.
Stocking stuffers?
You know the fucked up thing is? I was dictating this while I was on a walk with the dogs, and I was like, I hope there's nobody in earshot. Anyway,
that's
congratulations,
perfect.
Madison F.
Great job, Madison
we celebrate F. innovation
yes,
here. We don't
we love
we're not,
this.
And we don't kink shame on this podcast.
Just kink. Well, honey, Santa's got a brand new bag.
Okay, Papa's got a brand new bag.
It's that time of year and Santa is looking drab as fuck. Cue our friend Mary Ellen for designing a new bag for Santa Claus. It's chic, it's fashion, it's avant-garde, it's got a 3D printer inside.
Ooh.
It's technically dangerous and you will get escorted out of the TSA line.
Oh my god. You know what, actually, though, Santa could use a little bit of a bag upgrade. Wait.
I know.
Is Santa's bag red?
Mm-hmm.
It's red, like the rest of the outfit, right? But isn't it also, like, just like a canvas, like a burlap bag?
I think sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but this one's not.
I'm looking at our traveling Santa.
Yeah, but that's, he's vintage.
I'm going to tell, you know what's so funny is, like, family heirlooms in, like, 50 years is going to be shit that we all bought at Target. Like, because that's definitely where that came from.
Yeah, do you think?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, are there, it just seems like there's not as much, like, handmade shit anymore. Or is this a very boomer thing to say?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that there's so much cute stuff.
Target needs to start selling.
They need to start selling ugly stuff again. Here's the answer to fixing climate change.
Speaking of that, I found the most compelling YouTube channel earlier that this actually has nothing to do with what you're saying at all, but it was just this person's home movies. And so it was a 1989 home video of them taking a trip to McDonald's. And it was
amazing.
It was a really bizarre, how familiar it looked and seemed. And, you know, those weird memories are, somewhere in the recesses of your conscious.
Do you remember those, small plastic chairs, the swivel ones?
Yes.
Do they still do those in fast food?
I don't know. There was in Corpus Christi, the McDonald's that we would always go to with my dad had a big fish tank with these little swiveling stools with, the seat all the way around it. And my dad would always be like, all right, I'm going to go order, because we always order the same thing. I'm going to go order, and y'all go get our seats by the fish tank. I'm going to sit there and watch all
That's
the fish.
That's so cute.
Sometimes I would do that while eating a fillet of fish.
That's fucked up, honey.
I know.
That's fucked up.
I know. And
That's
I thought
20
it was
years bad luck.
I thought it was so funny, and that should have been a red flag. Okay. Jenny H. is excited to announce that she has begun recording rap music, a skill that she's been honing and developing for the past few years.
Oh, no.
And she is so excited to release her first round of new material under the name Mandy Mayhem.
No.
And she will not lose ever.
Fucker.
I'm sorry to do that to y'all. I don't know if anybody has seen her. I don't know what her story is or whatever. Just look up Mandy Mayhem on Instagram, okay?
Don't.
No,
actually,
support
don't.
Her.
No, don't support her. Nobody needs this.
Yeah.
Okay. Wyatt has been, watching. I'm sorry. I just got to say it. Wyatt has been watching the worst content lately.
That's true. That's absolute. I absolutely deserve
Honey,
that.
I think you're regressing.
I'm in a content rut. I really am. Should we even talk about this? No, we can't. Okay, you're right. And also, our friends, Jake and Aisha, who we have, such deep respect for, all day yesterday, I was like, honey, I really want to show them this YouTuber. I really want to show them. And you're like, you really shouldn't.
Don't do it.
It's really not funny.
Don't poison their brains.
It's really
bad.
And then you were in the kitchen. And it was like, I had no control of my body. And before I knew it, I was playing it.
I was like, there it is.
I'm now reaping the consequences in terms of shame.
It's just, you know what it is? It's like those, it's like people that make content that isn't very thoughtful, which is fine. Not everything needs to be thoughtful and highbrow or
and
whatever,
good.
You know? Yeah. But I do think that there are people that are a net negative for the world.
That's fair.
And if they were just in a vacuum, it would be funny.
Yeah.
But they're out in the world doing.
Yeah. Hitting the Benjamin.
No.
Going to Dabbington City.
Yodi gang.
No. Okay. Everyone, it is time for us to remind your asses of the hotline. If you haven't already, I have to be frank with y'all.
Ring.
The phones weren't ringing as much as they were for the first week or so. And I guess that's, in some ways, that's understandable. But also, do y'all not have questions? Do y'all not have problems? Do you not have things you're happy about? I find that incredibly hard to believe. So I'm going to need y'all to step it up and call us
If it's, yeah, and if it's any, like, if you want to, like, type it out and then read it, you know, into the phone, if that would be, you know,
yeah,
helpful. And we don't answer, so you're
no,
not,
nobody
you
answers.
Know, nobody answers.
Yeah, you don't so have to interact with anybody.
A message.
It's a, as I far as you're obvious. Concerned, it's a, as far as you're concerned, it's a void.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just speak your truth. Or you can lie. I mean, we'll never know. It's area code 919-901-0861. I think we've already said this too, but somebody asked about if there's any significance to the phone number. The answer is no. It's no. Just, it's a random. We're not in North Carolina, wherever that is.
I want to come up with a jingle for it.
Oh yeah, a little
919-901-0861.
I like that. 919-901. Was that it?
Yeah.
0861.
Yeah.
It'll make people want to call it. That's all I'm saying. Okay, but we did have some, we're selling ourselves short. We did have some messages.
Yes, and there's some interesting things to talk about this week.
Yeah, so there's messages like this one.
Hi, Mary. Hi, Wyatt. This is David calling from Syracuse, New York. And I just bought a banjo. I have been playing guitar for going on 14 years now. Self-taught, never taken a lesson, and learning a new instrument is really throwing me for a loop. So I was hoping you two would love to talk about learning a new instrument or writing a new song, anything about your music making and writing adventures. I would love to hear about it. Thank you very much. I hope you have a really good day.
That was so sweet, first of all.
It was like the sweetest, most wholesome message.
Like, thank you for that, David. We want to hug you, David.
Yes, that was so fucking sweet. And good for you for buying it. First of all, for being self-taught on the guitar and for getting a banjo. That's a really exciting, that's an exciting switch.
I've been looking at banjos lately because I also want to try some new instruments. Like,
yeah, Mary played a show yesterday, a benefit for Trans Health Northampton, and the green room was a Northampton music store that is relocating to this theater, and so all of their wares were hanging up on the walls.
I know, it was like a really generous act of trust.
Yes, too. I saw crazy things. Like, I saw a tiny little ukulele bass, but it was an electric ukulele bass.
So cool.
That looked like a Jackson, like one of those like cheesy ass Joe Satriani guitars.
That's rad.
It was really wild, unknown territory. So anyway, you definitely have new music on the horizon. It's probably been a while since you've tried a new instrument, right?
Yeah, but it's been on, like, I really, really want to try new stuff. And I'd also, like, I really want to start taking cello lessons again. Mm. And I would like to learn how to play the drums.
Ooh, yes. You already know how.
No, I do not. No. Absolutely not. No.
You could get lessons from Heather.
Yeah, that's true.
You have, like, the best drummer I know. Alive.
But I don't have a kit, so I feel like I need to go somewhere.
You can just imagine them. The mind is very powerful.
That's true. That's our advice to David. Music Man. Isn't that the premise of Music Man?
Actually, yes, right? But
just pretend.
What do you think? Do you think it's difficult if you can put your mind back to the first time you played the cello or played, can you put yourself back in the mindset of it being throwing you for a loop, possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think someone who wants, like, I just want to make beautiful things. So it's difficult when you're, like, first learning something to be like, okay, I have to accept, like,
I'm a beginner.
Yeah, that I'm going to humble myself to this experience and, like, to not have that critical editor brain when you're first playing and to, like, let yourself have fun. And I think it's also okay. Like, I really like a hybrid learning experience, and I've done this with all of the instruments I've learned, which is, like, okay, how do most people do it? Like, show me the books and let me do sort of the classic way of learning. And then let me experiment and let me try to, like, make what sounds good on my end.
Yeah.
Because it is it is discouraging when it doesn't sound good right away. And if you can create little hacks for yourself to be like, what would it sound like if I wrote a song that just, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I think when I was first writing music and first playing piano, I would just get frustrated because I was like, it just took so long to learn. And I was like, yeah. I don't want to learn. I want it to sound good right now.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I just started playing around and yeah. I started like trying to make things that sounded good because I wanted to create a song.
Yes.
And I think that's always a fun approach to, and in some ways I feel like that was the best time of writing music for me where I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And like I listened back to some of the songs that I was writing, the harmonic structures that I created without yeah. knowing what I was making.
Right.
Was like they're really neat and they end up like they're more complex than what I write now.
Yeah.
And I think that's really neat to start a new instrument because you get to like have fresh ears with it.
Yeah.
And like it's, I think another string instrument is the perfect like movement to learn something because yeah. you have like the fundamentals, you know, like
how to fret.
Yeah.
How to, right.
Exactly.
Like, you know, those sort of like basic mechanics.
Yeah. How do you feel?
That's a really good question. I think I was just reflecting on this when thinking about this question yesterday. I think a lot of the music that I really liked around the time that I started playing guitar was music in which being adept at playing the guitar in any, you know, classical sort of sense was absolutely not valued at all. Like
totally.
You know what I mean? I'm thinking about like Nirvana and Hole and Bikini Kill where it's like they're not, those are just power chords, yeah. you know? So like I got really good at like palm muting and power chords and like and all of that. But and I got good at playing the guitar, but it's amazing to me how fast it leaves you if you don't practice it.
Totally.
And it's not like, I feel like, you know, if you learn a language and you kind of lapse out of speaking it or practicing it and then you get back to speaking it or practicing it, you can pick it back up, you mm-hmm, know, like mm-hmm. those kind of, what do you call them? Like grooves in your brain are yeah. still there. But I feel like with instruments, it's not, your body is not quite, it doesn't remember quite as well. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, fuck, I feel like I have to start over completely. And like,
totally.
I remember too, like, I remember my mom telling me that if I learned, like, you know, I had an acoustic guitar and I really wanted an electric guitar. And I remember that she was like, you need to learn some more songs on the acoustic guitar. And once you do that, I'll know that you're like ready for an electric guitar, which makes no sense. It's not like an electric guitar is not like a more advanced version of like, it. You know, I love you, mom, but that made no sense. But so I was like, fine. So I learned like Norwegian Wood. And like, so like, I remember I was like, I'm going to do Beatles songs. I feel like that will be particularly convincing to my Beatle manic mother.
You're pandering.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember just being really thrilled by it. Like I took a few lessons, but I really learned. I was just always so, my ADD was so bad when I was younger that after a whole day of like going to school, the idea of sitting through a guitar lesson and paying attention, I just couldn't. Yeah. It was, my brain was just so fatigued. And I don't know why I didn't just do it on the weekends. But anyway, so I did piano lessons for a while and I did guitar lessons, but I really learned the guitar from buying Guitar World magazine and trying to learn the songs from the tablature. Like cool. every issue of those magazines would have like five tabbed out songs in the back. And so I would just like learn those and I'd play along with the radio a lot and things like that.
Totally.
And yeah, I think it's just really exciting and being able to, you know, like pick something up and build off of those skills. But I haven't tried to play a new instrument since I don't know when. I guess the closest thing would be the bass. That's what I learned last.
Mm-hmm.
And I had so much fun playing the bass with you. Like, I could have, it humbled me too, because I was like, oh my God, I have so much to learn. But I think I'm a little bit more tolerant of being shitty at something. You don't like that feeling. Like, I think.
I really don't.
Yeah, you want to. But, and you don't have to deal with it very often because you're such a skilled musician. Like, I see you producing. That is like a whole nother instrument in some ways.
Totally. That's kind of how I feel is like the whole process of composing for film, I feel like is like learning a new instrument, and like production is its own instrument to be like, okay, I'm literally like, how do I make these sounds make sense altogether?
And to make them make sense with a movie going on.
Yeah.
Like, that's another, I mean, not like an instrument, but you're definitely like expanding your repertoire. Totally.
Yeah. And also, I think one thing that is really, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, been elusive to me is how to incorporate percussion and like rhythmic elements into my work. It is like, I've just never really understood it. And from only until maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years ago was I really, really comfortable playing with a drummer.
Really?
Yeah, because I, so much of what I do,
It was you and the guitar or the piano.
Yeah, and my my tempo is terrible. Like, my internal metronome is real bad.
I don't see that at all.
But, well, I've gotten better. But, yeah. But at the time, it was like, I like to take a lot of pauses, and I like to be like, you know, I like to just really emotionally feel it.
Yeah.
But you can't do that when you have a drummer. You can't do that when you have percussive elements. And so that has been its own sort of challenge. And also being like, you know, it's clear drums are supposed to be in this section, in this part of the composition, and just trying to figure out how to make that make sense with what limited knowledge I have.
Well, you were doing that really cool, like, industrial sounding, like, the stuff that reminded me of the Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross thing.
I love that you said that.
Like, that, like, kind of, what do you call that?
Yeah, I would call it, like, industrial, like, you know, distorted drums, like metallic.
It's cool.
Yeah, like,
had you done that before?
Mm-mm, no, but I knew I was looking for a particular sound palette, and I knew I didn't want traditional drums, but that I wanted something that felt like machinery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just like finding different, you know, elements to a loop and to, like, you know, what needs to be built out of it.
Right.
And will complement the synth, because I kept using the same synth in the score, which is the Nova synth. That's one of my favorites. And it's just like, it has a nice beefy, like, full lush sound.
Yeah.
And so I knew I wanted something kind of metallic with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had the vision before you started messing around with it.
Yeah, I do. Well, and also the thing, like, that has been really interesting with composing that has been a new element is, like, a lot of times when I'm working on, like, scores or spec scores, it's like people will send a temp score. So they have, the directors or the editors will already have an idea of what, like, where they want music and the kind of energy and feel they want of it. And it's my job to be like, okay, what is my interpretation of spec score? And as it's been a real challenge as, like, a people pleaser to be like, do I want to emulate identically what this score is?
Like, and do exactly what you want.
Yeah. Or do I want to just do whatever the fuck I want that I think is going to sound best. I'm like, do I want my vocals in it?
or
should I just keep it really sparse or whatever?
It's kind of like how they used to, how a lot of writing teachers used to approach writing pedagogy was just having students, like, mimic certain famous pieces of literature or essays or poems. Like, I had a, and this hadn't totally gone out of vogue by the time I was in high school. I had an English teacher who had us, like, sort of do a reinterpretation of Langston Hughes' theme from English B. And it was a really interesting exercise. Have you ever had a writing teacher tell you to, like, mimic a poem style? So that's sort of what it reminds me of. Like, and it's an interesting challenge because you're like, okay, what am I going to draw from this? Because you can get pretty abstract. Like, you know, you don't have to, like, you know, absolutely mimic everything the writer is doing. You can pull inspiration from it in a lot of different ways. So I guess that's kind of what you have to do without, like, sticking to it too closely.
Yeah, totally. I did have a teacher that had us, like, you know, writing an iambic pentameter or something. You know what I mean? Or like a sonnet, like, following the structure. But I never liked that. That was not fun for me.
I don't think I've asked you this yet, but you know how this whole
You know, this, I feel like just the past couple of months, well, I mean, people who are interested in technology and society stuff have been talking about this for a million years, but I feel like it's really ramped up in the age of Lensa. What do you think, because I've heard mentioned a few times, like, what's happening right now with visual art, it's just a matter of time before, like, AI can, like, generate pop songs. What are your thoughts about that? I don't know what kind of reaction I'm expecting. Just what's your kind of like knee-jerk feeling about that? Have you thought about it?
It's funny because my first reaction is panic. Like, really? I'm like no. Automation is killing jobs. But I think Lensa and like the AI art like served its kind of purpose. But yeah. I think everybody knows that it is like it. It's something special when it's created by a kind of person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think...
Oh, you mean like just by an actual human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I think music's the same way. And I just, I would be really interested. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know that I feel it's super fucking nefarious.
Yeah. Well, what is... hamstringing acceptance of it right now is that it's all really derivative, but the way I think about it, a lot of it is like artificial intelligence is also a human creation. That's mm-hmm. also an expression of human, it's a result of human ingenuity and creativity. Yeah. What I think is not cool, obviously, is the way that it is like aping other people's work. That's mm-hmm. not good, but mm-hmm. I think, I think the reason that there's an interesting conversation to have around it, well, one thing. First of all, there's this thing that happens now with like any like capital I issue that comes up, like this thing that happens on the internet where the acceptable positions on it within like certain social circles like congeals really quickly.
Yes.
And there is like one acceptable way of viewing a situation. And actually, I think the situation is actually pretty complicated. And like, obviously, like stealing other people's art, things like that, like that's obviously unacceptable. But, you know, I saw a lot of people that I knew who are trans or non-binary or gender non-conforming who were posting their Lensa posts because it was like super affirming for them to see themselves totally. Like in a particular gender. And I did say, I have to say, like, no offense if any of y'all posted this. I'm not talking about anybody specifically. In my mind, I'm just like thinking about the discourse. But like, I saw a few people who were like, you know, instead of spending $8 on this AI, why don't you commission somebody to like do your portrait? And I'm like, okay, there's a gap in price.
Yeah.
Like, what you're talking about right now, like if you think that it is accessible for most people to like commission a good, like a good artist to do a portrait, like I don't know. So that yeah. to me was a little bit out of touch with reality. But I didn't want it to be like completely shit on because I think it's like. Made something accessible, like people being able to see themselves a particular way that I think was really powerful for a lot of people.
I think so too.
And I think it's, you know, I don't want people to feel inordinate amounts of shame over like a system that's not really their fault, you know? And that I don't think these people are like knowingly contributing to like the downfall of artists or anything. But of course I know it is like, it's troubling. I know that and I acknowledge that first and foremost. Like, yeah. It's not good that this is some creepy, shadowy company that's probably selling everybody's fucking likeness. Like, that's bad.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I have seen, like, there are artists that will do, you know, portraits for, like, $20. You know
what I mean? Which, cool.
Like, you know, or, you know, especially, like, during the holidays, we'll, like, do sales and things like that.
Oh, that's so okay. I didn't know that. That's yeah. awesome. Okay, yeah. So it's a lot more accessible than I thought.
It is, yes. But the thing with Lensa is that there's like what, like 50?
There's hundreds.
You get so many different.
Yeah, right.
You know,
like I think that maybe that's what I meant. In order to get like that same volume of work from someone, mm-hmm. which of course, like I understand. I get it. I understand. Jesus Christ.
No, but I think the other thing with Lensa is that it is there's not that it's entirely objective, but that it is it. I think it was interesting to be like, okay, what would this, you know, someone that doesn't know me or that doesn't have, you know, well, I guess that's what people were saying is that there are lots of biases around,
you know, Lensa. Like, I think it did pose a lot of really interesting ethical questions. And I think it was a really neat thing that unfolded.
Yeah.
I think the discourse around it has been really cool. But I also agree with you. Yeah, it's been useful.
I would agree with you. That's a good way of thinking about it. I think it's something that we are absolutely going to have to contend with. Like, mm-hmm. I know that in every area, like in academia, we're definitely going to have to contend with. I just read this article in The Atlantic about the, I think it was Stephen Marsh who wrote it, about the fact that there are these, like, open AI text generators that can, like, write fucking essays in response to prompts.
Really? And
they're, like, graduate-level essays, like, AI-generated essays, and, like, plagiarism detectors can't track them because they're not stolen from anyone. And, like, academic honor codes don't cover it because you shouldn't steal someone else's work, but it's not someone else. It's a script generator.
Whoa.
Or a text generator. So, yeah, I think in every area we're going to have to deal with these kind of, like, these philosophical questions. So
totally.
I think it's really interesting.
I think so, too. Wow, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, Aubrey Gordon posted, like, she had posted a few Lensa photos of herself, and she had said that she was uncomfortable with that it eliminated her double chin, and that it was it made her less fat.
Yeah.
And she wasn't as, like, she was, like, annoyed by that, but there were some that were really interesting to her and some that she really enjoyed, but she really didn't like people's reactions to the ones where she looked thinner.
Oh, right, right.
And so, and I wonder if that was part of the thing for other people, was, like, the responses to certain photos of them.
There's also a really interesting, like, I read in that Atlantic article, there was an excerpt of an AI-generated essay response, and it was like, as I was reading it, if you had just told me, you know, a graduate student wrote this, I don't think, because I wasn't clued in, I don't think I don't know if I would have noticed, but, like, knowing it was AI and going into it, I was like, oh yeah, I can absolutely tell this is not, like, as fluid as even a human being who maybe is not the smoothest prose stylist. Like, mm-hmm. It was still just a little weird in a few places. Like, it just wasn't quite right. It was like that uncanny valley kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I find that, like, what I've noticed in the AI-generated art, like, I just saw somebody on Twitter who posted, you know, it was like these four images. It was like, say what you will about AI art, but it was really pretty cool. This is pretty cool. And it was these four AI-generated images of this older black woman. But then somebody was like, yeah, but look. And, like, her hands were blurred out in all the photos because AI, like, can't handle hands. So hands look like some kind of, you know, like, nuclear waste was spilled on, like, a hot dog factory, you know?
Why is that?
I don't know. It can't handle hands. I don't know why. I'm really curious to know. Maybe I'll look this up.
Strange. Maybe somebody can call in and let us know.
Yeah.
If you know about this stuff.
I'm Googling it. I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'd love to know anybody's thoughts about Lensa and about their experience with that.
Oh, okay. This says, why don't AI generators understand hands?
Yeah.
And someone said, they don't have, Oh, this is really interesting. It says that there's a reason that AI generators struggle with fingers and hands. This is just an article on Medium, I guess.
Scary photo. Yeah,
I guess there's an entire, like, Tumblr page dedicated to it. But it says that the hand anatomy is complex.
Is it really?
So due to the complex geometry of hands, there's no standard set of lines or shapes that AI can recognize as a hand. It says there are multiple articulations on each finger that need to be depicted correctly or a hand looks unnatural.
Oh.
Even when hands are relaxed, there's information to be drawn. Wrinkles and folds on the knuckles, shading of palms. So yeah, it says in order to generate realistic hands, AI needs to collate multiple shapes and arrangements.
Wow.
Interesting. And I guess somebody made the point too that it is incredibly difficult to draw hands.
That's true.
So it's hard for a human to do it.
I always just hide them. Hide them behind the back.
Exactly.
Put them in pockets.
Right? There you go. But yeah, the images of this, the AI-generated art of this black woman, the same person also, like, zoomed into certain parts of her face, and it was just that little uncanny valley feeling of, like, there's something just not quite right. It just doesn't, you know, like, there'd be, like, an extra set of lines where they shouldn't be, or mm-hmm. you know, like the eyes were like kind of at a weird angle, like, you know, these little kind of tells.
Totally.
But so that's just me being like, huh, they haven't figured it all out yet. We can't be replaced by robots. You can't even do raw hands. So we're gonna be fine. We're not gonna have some weird iRobot future.
I mean, yeah, I think there are a lot of tells, you know, but they've been doing this with music for a while.
Really?
Yeah, like there was this
AI generated stuff.
Yeah, well, it was like what is it? IBM? Was it IBM the robot? What's the robot's name?
Oh, Deep Blue,
the one that went against Ken Jennings.
Yeah, I think it was called Deep Blue. Was Deep Blue the computer that beat Watson? Yes, yeah, sorry. Okay, Deep Blue was the computer that played chess.
Yes.
That's what it was. Gary Kasparov and beat Gary Kasparov at chess. Okay, wild. Got it. But Watson was the computer that beat Ken Jennings. Wait.
Yes.
Well, did it beat Ken Jennings?
I think so.
And it was weird, too. Like, it would respond. I remember watching those Jeopardy episodes, and it would take pieces of information and have wrong answers that were really strange. Anyway, go ahead.
Ooh, I want to watch those.
You've ever watched them?
No, I've never watched them. So IBM created a, like basically some compositions, I think. And I think they ended up being kind of good. Like, they were good compositions. But I think people, I think people are interested in it, in the novelty of it, but uh-huh. not that, like, I do think they believe at its core, like, it's a betrayal of humanity.
Right.
Like, you know
right,
what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just feel like it wouldn't be, I don't believe that people think it's ethical.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason that no one's going to put Lenza in a gallery and it's not going to sell for $1 million.
That there's something unethical about it, right? Yeah. There's something that just rubs us the wrong way.
Yeah, I guess not unethical, but
yeah, just... it's something else. It's something else. It doesn't... It maybe we don't value it the way that we value, like, human art, or we feel like we shouldn't. We're being very careful about that.
Yes.
I'm looking right now that there's apparently this open AI called Jukebox that generates, you'll just, like, give it a genre, artist, and lyrics, and it will output a new music sample.
Okay, that's really rad.
I wonder what this is.
Pop. Okay, pop in the style of... No, this is...
Huh?
This is pop in the style of Katy Perry.
Okay, I think you're safe. What the fuck? What was that? That was a sleep paralysis demon.
That was really scary.
That was really bad. Also, the lyrics are fucking horrible. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like we're dealing with Shakespeare here, but...
Oh my God.
Every minute, every hour, I've been working my time. Well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, okay. So yeah, I think you're okay. I think you're going to be okay.
No, but there was this... Okay, so... I remember I was, like, working out some sort of deal with, like, I can't remember what was happening. There was some contract was being negotiated, and I called my lawyer, and he's like, sorry, I'm putting this huge fire out. I have to file a lawsuit against IBM. And I was like, oh my God.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Did I totally interrupt you earlier?
No.
Okay,
oh my God, no.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
And, apparently, like, oh, maybe that I probably shouldn't talk about this.
You're amongst friends. Nobody's listening to this.
There ended up being some unnamed company that has AI had an ad that they said this was a AI generated rock song.
Really?
And they put it on the ad, and it ended up being like an actual band.
Really?
Song. Yeah, and so like. So Richard was just like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, and as you know what? I'm really glad you said that because, like, I know that a lot of people will say that music is really derivative right now and that pop music is really derivative and it's just pieces of other things. But I don't really know if that's true. I feel like people legitimately do really unexpected, really innovative things, even if they're small.
I think so, too.
And I don't think AI can – I don't think – fuck. I actually have no idea. But my guess is that AI can't, like, innovate. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just taking pieces of what's already been done. It's learning, right? Because that's what it does. Yeah. It learns.
Isn't part of it, it's like, it's programmed to do X, Y, and Z.
Yes, exactly. So but it can't go beyond the current limits of human capacity, right? Like,
yeah.
it can't, or of what people have done already.
Totally.
I don't think. Is it? Sound off in the comments.
Kimmy? I'm here.
That's an inside joke.
We saw a trailer for a movie that we want to see.
Yeah, that's as far as we can get. We're like, yes. We watched the trailer for something together. We do not have time to watch entire movies. We're like half an hour into Dear Evan Hansen.
Yes. Well, I watched Dear Evan Hansen. I loved it
so much. I'm loving it already.
People made so much fun of it for like Ben Platt's, like, you know, how strange the special effects
I don't notice it anymore.
Yeah, right?
I noticed it for like the first like 5 minutes. It was kind of distracting, and then I just bought into the story completely.
Totally.
And his acting, like, yeah. It did not bother me.
Also, this squeaking of the toy, like right below the microphone, is something.
Is it audible, you think?
I'm sure.
This is real, dude.
This is real life, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is the unvarnished truth. What happens when people stop being polite?
And start being real.
They squeak. If you don't like it, if you can't handle us at our Marilyn Monroe, then you don't deserve us at our Jack Kennedy.
June.
I have Kennedys on the brain. There is one piece of media that we watched in its entirety together.
Yes, actually, the film that I worked on, our editor, Jill Woodward, was an editor for this miniseries about Casey Anthony.
Yes, which I know everybody's like, don't watch it. She's a liar. I'm like, I don't think watching it is like necessarily an endorsement of whether or not what she's saying is true, right?
Yeah.
It's a fucking piece of media,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Which I'm fascinated by the Casey Anthony case. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by any like high profile situations like that. I am not into true crime necessarily. But I like watching interrogations, and she has some all-time interrogations.
Yes, she does.
Where, I mean, it's really fascinating, where she is just really lying a lot and doesn't really seem to, like, she'll get caught in it, and it'll be like, yeah. They'll be like, but wait a minute. She'll be like, X. And they'll be like, but wait a minute, I thought you said Y. And she's like, well, yeah, Y, but, like, also X. And they're like, no, X can't be true. And she's like, well, Z, then. And they're just like, okay, I guess you're right. I mean, no, not really. They're not really buying anything she's saying. But she's also just like the way that she flirts with people and it works. Like, mm-hmm. It's just really interesting, I think.
Also, it was like very, I was like, she's pretty. She's really pretty.
I know. I felt really, I was like, after like watching like two episodes of it, I was like, I really hate to say this. I was like, honey, I'm sorry. I was like, Casey Anthony's kind of hot. I know it's not right. And like, and I never thought that originally, yeah. But like, she looks good now.
I know.
But anyway.
This is not the right conversation. It's not good.
Yeah, like, no, it's not good. Sorry. Yeah. Don't judge us. Like, yeah, no, we're good people. We don't support bad things. Like, but watching it got you thinking.
Yeah. Well, so I grew up and I was a constant liar. Like a compulsive liar, lying when it was important, lying when it wasn't important, lying to my friends, lying to my parents. And I lied for a long time, I would think, like up until, you know, even partway through high school.
About stuff that mattered, didn't matter, all of it?
All of it, yeah. And I got caught in lies a lot. And I remember...
So did I. I would too.
I remember my mom just getting really... exasperated with me, just like really exhausted with how frequently I lied, and it hurt her. Like, she'd be like, I just don't, like, it hurts me that I can never trust you. I can never trust when you're gonna say something,
right?
And I remember feeling like, I don't know how to stop, like, and I don't know why I do it. And so I think it really originated from trauma, from wanting my life to be different than it was.
Right.
And I remember this big lie that I got caught in was that my parents had a farmhouse in Colorado, and we went there over winter break, and I got to ride horses.
Aww.
and it was just so beautiful, and I just, before I went to bed, I always thought of this dream house in Colorado. And and
this so kind I, of Dear Evan Hansen esque,
yes, yeah,
motivated by something different,
yeah.
But still,
and I told everybody at school about it, and I told my teacher about it, and then it was like parent teacher conferences or some Girl Scout thing, And one of the parents' moms went up to my parents and was like, how was Colorado? I heard all about it. And my parents were like, huh? And
shit.
So it was, so then I had to go, my parents made me go to each person that I had lied to and tell them the truth and like tell and do that to my teacher and do that to all of the parents and all of my friends.
That
and
it sucks was just too, because it's not like a hurtful, it's not like you slandered someone or, you know, said something that could hurt somebody. Like it was all just like aspirational.
Yeah.
You know, benign.
Totally. Yes. But then it, like, I really wanted to wear pajamas to school. Like, everybody wore pajama bottoms. That was the thing, right?
Yes.
Is that still kind of a thing?
I don't know, but they would all... I just remember that, like, these girls would wear these ones that were, like, too long, and mm-hmm. they would just get, like, dragged in the fucking rain, or, like, getting crushed by their Doc Martens.
I wanted to wear pajama bottoms to school so bad, like all of the other kids, and my mom was like, no kid of mine is going to be wearing pajama bottoms to school. And so I remember... I was about to leave for school one day, and she's like, absolutely not. You're not wearing pajama bottoms. And I was like, it's actually pajama day at school.
That's a benign lie, too.
And she was like, I'm going to call the school right now.
Shit.
You better fess up. And then I was like, fuck, fine.
You're like, you know? Okay, yeah.
So I did things like that a lot.
Me too.
And then as I got older, it sometimes spiraled. And I think that that's really indicative of either a mental disorder or trauma.
Yeah.
And I think it's clear from watching like Casey Anthony's stuff where I was like, this person, like, no, like, we don't have to get into whether she did it or not. You know what I mean?
But
like,
yeah.
It's clear that she experienced trauma.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just think like someone that lies that frequently and also that well.
Yeah.
Like she experienced something.
Right.
And I wonder if there's like a real overlap of like childhood sexual abuse too that comes with that.
What I always think is when someone lies about, you know, gets caught lying about having experienced something really horrific, my thought is always like, either way, something is wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like,
totally.
Whether it's true or it's not true, mm-hmm. it's still, I think, like, it's still a cry for help. And I don't think it's something that people do, like, you know, well-adjusted people who are making normal, rational decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, I think something is wrong, you know? Like, for normal people, unless, like, I don't know, it's some really extreme, bizarre circumstance, like you're trying mm-hmm. to get yourself out of trouble or something. But normally, like, I just don't think that's behavior that normal people tend to.
Totally.
I don't know what I mean by normal people, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
I think
it's typical.
Right. It's indicative of, because in a lot of ways, as you sort of demonstrated, it's like putting yourself in a really bad position and you kind of know it.
Yeah.
You know that like what you're saying is not totally sustainable.
I think it's normal for kids to lie.
Yes. Like, yeah. Kids lie all the time.
Yeah, totally. Like, did you eat those cookies? No.
And they'll have chocolate over their hands. Yeah, and I'm like, totally. No, of course I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think people lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think there is something. I think it is weird when people lie about inconsequential shit. I think actually that's a flag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the stakes aren't high and you're just making shit up.
Yeah.
Well, you know?
And it's also like, you know, I think we were talking about this as we were watching the documentary. I was like, because there would be some aspects of it, because I really like to engage with stuff with the like most possible charitability every single time. So
yeah,
even if somebody I totally disagree with or something I'm totally predisposed to not believe, I try to like cast aside judgment as much as I can and like really listen to it in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this moment where I looked at you and I was like, isn't it so frustrating that you can just never fully know if somebody's telling you the truth about something?
Yeah.
You can't like really get into their brain and figure it out. And even like lie detector tests, as far as I know, are fucking horseshit. That's what I've heard. Is it like they're not, I don't even know if they're admissible as like evidence in court. They shouldn't be.
I don't think they are.
Even the like how you could really physiologically tell the difference between somebody who is lying and anxious about the fact that they're lying or somebody who's telling the truth and is anxious about telling, I just don't buy that. I don't know that much about
it
physiologically, but like I think I might have mentioned this on a previous episode of the podcast, but I somehow fell into this weird YouTube rabbit hole of this channel called, it was like the behavioral panelist or something, and it was all just total pseudoscience, mm-hmm. all of it. It was like they'd use these, and you know, like any pseudoscience, they'd have all these weird terms, like, oh yeah, and if you look here at her intensifiers or at her, you know, demonstrators, like her demonstrators are up, and so, you know, that's really associated with lying. I was like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? And like, sure enough, I like did just 5 minutes of research. I was like, nobody knows.
Yeah,
they don't know. There are patterns that they think might be associated with deception, but for mm-hmm. like every time you find an example of that, there's, and also it, since you can't get to the, you can't really ever really arrive at the truth, you're always just guessing.
Totally.
But
I also think it's individualist, like
individualized.
Like,
yeah.
People have their own tells.
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like when I'm lying, I'm like, my throat closes up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You know? Yeah.
Or I'm like that's my, I feel like I have nervous tells.
And the premise of a lie detector test is that, you know, you grow up learning that if you lie, you get in trouble. So you mm-hmm. have like an instinctive physiological reaction mm-hmm. to like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's premised in, you know, fear of your parents. What if you didn't grow up with that fear of your parents? What if you were never like imbued with a sense of lying being risky? Like, what if your parents were fucking liars all the time? Or like, what if...
But I feel like you would glean it from like culture.
Media or culture. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But what if you just genuinely don't give a shit? Like, what if like...
Well, then you're a sociopath, right?
Right. Like, I mean, I guess, but yeah. then...
Not to be armchair
no, but
psychologist.
In that case, it's like, what if you're a sociopath? Are you not guilty by reason of insanity or something? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It just, I think it gets so complicated. It's impossibly complicated.
Yeah, that's really true.
But I've been thinking about it because there is... I'm reading this book. I think John Farrell is the author's name. This biography of Ted Kennedy that just came out that is so, so good. I think it might be the best written biography I've ever read.
Wow.
It's so fucking good. It's gotten a little slow right now, but it's really good. And so Ted Kennedy's, you know, the really dark spot in his past that is the reason that, like, he otherwise would have absolutely been elected president. I mean, and he tried, you know, like, he ran against Jimmy Carter in the primaries in, like, I think the late 70s or early 80s. But he would have been successful were it not for, of course, the events of Chappaquiddick.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, nobody really knows exactly what happened because even his story changed a million times. And,
right.
like, there was just all of it sounded fucking cockamamie. And, you know, but he was driving with this woman who worked for him in the car after leaving this beach party. And the car ends up, like, driving off of the road in the sort of current of this river. And she drowns. And the issue at stake is, you know, was he drunk? Were they going off to have sex? You know, he was married with somebody else. Was, you know, he originally, apparently, according to reports, was going to tell everybody that she was driving and then just decided at the last minute, like, no, I don't think so. And there's this part of the story where he supposedly tells these people working for him that he's going to go to the police, and then he just, like, jumped in the water and swam to the next town, and he says, oh, yeah, and then I went to my hotel room and fell asleep, and I don't know why. And then the next morning, I went to the police. And just reading it, like, I think we have if we have an instinct for anything, I think we do have, like, a pretty reliable instinct for, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's why it's, like...
Yeah, it doesn't add up.
Yeah, there's a standard in law, actually, that's, like, would a reasonable person do
right,
this?
Right,
and
yes.
That's not reasonable behavior. That doesn't make any fucking sense at
yes.
all. And so, like, Casey Anthony not calling the police for 30 days while her kid's missing also doesn't make any fucking sense.
Totally.
But she's, like, retroactively trying to make sense of that by
yeah.
saying, like, oh, but I was terrified because of this whole – I mean, if y'all haven't watched this – if it is, like, just beyond the pale for you to consider watching it, I'll just say that she has a very what's a good adjective for this? Complicated explanation for what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, which, well, okay, we don't have to get into it. But anyway. Yeah, I think I'm fascinated because I think, like you said, whether it is born out of trauma or, mm-hmm. you know, just, like, total selfishness and panic, cause I think that's mm-hmm. another thing that
yeah,
lying
can... Yeah, fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I think a reasonable person who is just, like, really fucking scared, like... You know, I'm imagining, like, Ted Kennedy in that moment was like, my whole political life is over. It's over. Like, it's
yeah.
no matter what happens now. Like,
yeah.
I'm imagining that at some point he, like, sat down or just stood there and was like, holy fuck. Like, I just killed someone. Like, this is it. This is it. And I come from this, like, you know, political dynasty, and, you know, he's, this is also somebody who's experienced trauma, and, you know, mm-hmm. both of his brothers getting assassinated and all this crazy shit. But, yeah. like, so I was thinking about it a lot then, too. Like, oh, and I think I agree with what you said. Like, people are really, people are individuals, and they respond to situations so differently. But at the same time, there's this school of thought that, like, humans are super predictable, and if you put them in certain situations, you can predict how they'll behave pretty accurately.
Yeah. I could see that. Absolutely see that. Yeah. I think when I'm thinking about my relationship with, like, compulsive lying and how I grew out of that, it feels good. I'm, like, proud. I'm, like, cool. I'm glad that but is that something I grew out of? I guess a little bit, because I didn't feel good about it. Like, and especially when I started, you know, developing relationships that I wanted to have for a really long time.
Yeah.
I felt like, oh, I'm going to have to keep this up.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of, like, lying for, like, big stuff is, like, really exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of energy.
I think that is one thing that I think is actually borne out by some kind of scientific research, is that it takes up a lot of your, like, mental bandwidth to lie.
Yeah.
Like, it requires a lot of energy.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you're just constantly having to think about, like, okay, if this, then this, you know?
I think it's likely that you just learned other coping mechanisms, or, like, you learned other strategies, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and another reason I wanted to talk about this is because as I grew out of that, I started thinking about lying and its relationship to, like, social media and appearances, and, like, how much we want to show that everything's okay.
Yes.
And, like, what part of that is, like, an extension of lying, or, like, lying by omission or something.
Yeah.
And because we've been talking lately about how exhausted we sort of feel with social media, not necessarily consuming it, but like, putting stuff out.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like if I don't say things a particular way, or if I don't, if I forget something, like, I remember one time, I think I posted a photo of you and I was like, oh, what a stud, you know, like, from my perspective and from my relationship with that word, it's just, you know, it's just like a hottie, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I got responses from people that were like, hey, this is, you know, this is a word that is, you know, actually rooted in something else.
Right.
And it's good. It's good to be educated. It is really good to know about those kinds of things. And I do have a desire to know those things and to be inclusive. And I feel like my heart is always in the right place.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate the education, but I do think there is this feeling of, like, oh no, I'm scared to do X, Y, and Z because I'm scared that I'm going to fuck up.
Right.
Not that I'm going to hurt people's feelings.
You're worried about, like, getting in trouble
or
having people think poorly of you.
Exactly. And I think there was a period of time when I would post content and I would feel like, oh, I want to be inclusive and as compassionate as possible because that's where my heart is.
Right.
And, like, that's – I feel very motivated by compassion.
Uh-huh.
And now I feel more motivated by fear and by saying the wrong thing. And I think you touched on it of there – it is clear that there's a really correct way to see situations and there's an incorrect way to see situations.
Yeah.
Specifically, I think, online.
Right.
That – it doesn't matter, or it does matter to a lot of people that, you know, it's not just that you end up with the same resolve, at the same resolve or at the same result, but that your way to get there is the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that really is unfortunate because I think people come from so many different walks of life.
Absolutely.
And it takes people different routes to get to
absolutely.
A specific result. That is, like, I think the, you know, progressive ideology and, like, liberal ideals are
like,
of course,
the most compassionate, the most inclusive,
and the most honest.
Yes. Oh. And but I think that for some people it takes it takes a different route.
Yeah.
And I feel,
or it could be a longer journey.
Totally. Yeah. But I also recognize that, like, as people are getting to those places, they can have ricochet shots to people who are oppressed and people that come from marginalized communities, that it wears on those people. And you were talking too about being so overly connected that it's like, it's weird that you know what someone from high school is doing today.
Yes.
Like,
we were not meant to have, I don't think we were like intended to have social circles quite this big. And I think it's also really natural for like people to come and go out of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a sense of sort of sensory overload. Mm-hmm. And I told you the other day, like, I find myself getting into this position where I'd be like annoyed with people that I haven't seen in like 10 years. Totally. Like, I'd be like, oh fuck, Stacey's so annoying. And I'd be like, these are normal circumstances now, but like 20 years ago, I just would have not ever thought about her because I wouldn't see her. And like, totally. She's not even annoying. I'm just, yeah. I just am not interested, and I'm being shown images. I'm not being shown them. I'm looking for them, you know, mm-hmm. without knowing I'm looking for them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it can be a little bit, it's a little overwhelming.
Totally. So, but I guess
Sorry,
that was a tangent, but like, when I'm thinking about the things that I put out in the world and like my content, I feel like I used to be more active on social media, and I feel like I used to feel more free with it. And now I really just am like, okay, this is, I just don't want to upset. I don't want to upset anyone.
Yeah.
And I kind of just want to share what's going on in my world.
Yeah.
And like, I will engage the way I want to, you know, personally, in my sort of personal,
yeah,
in my personal sphere.
Yeah.
And that's been feeling better. But what I do think happens is this curation of identity.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are people's perceptions of who I am, and, you know, and who we are,
yeah,
like, as in our relationship. And something we didn't talk about, you know, until right now, is that we had a difficult time recording this episode.
Yeah.
And there are times when we will start recording and like have to return to it later because it's not necessarily,
the vibe's off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and like, either we're both super stressed with work or the timing, because we usually record in the evening.
Yeah.
And you have to work super fucking early, and it's like, there's no other time during the day.
Yeah.
And so if something goes too late, then it's like, it's just, sometimes it can be a stressful experience.
Yeah.
Not the actual record. I feel like when we get in the groove, it's really
no
fun.
But it can be, yeah, the task kind of looming.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it is stressful, like, mm-hmm. it is, like, we care about it a lot, and that,
yeah,
that can lead to stress, and sometimes we don't have the exact same vision for it, like, mm-hmm. all the reasons that, like, lots of couples don't do podcasts, yeah, together, you know.
Totally. Yeah. But someone called in and had this to say.
Hello, this is Stella Bynum. I am a local to Northampton. I actually met you guys last year at the, I think it was the fifth grade graduation thing. My kid was there, and Mary's niece or nephew, I can't remember, sorry. But I met you guys briefly. And I was just listening to the first episode of the season about your wedding, and I just wanted to say thank you for sharing your experience about people not showing up to the wedding, because my partner and I got married last year, and I kind of had a similar experience. And when I was first looking at all the photos of your wedding come out and hearing you guys talk about it, like, I was so happy for you, but it also made me a little sad, because I was like, oh, look at this big party that they had, and like, look at all these people they had there, and, you know, they had all of their loved ones show up, and it's so great. And it made me a little sad, because, you know, I didn't get to really have that, because I am estranged from my family, and I've moved around a lot as an adult, so I don't have a whole lot of, like, friends that, you know, I have long-standing relationships with. And a lot of people that I thought would come from various places I've lived over the years didn't come. And so I had very few people, you know, on my side there. And it was sad. And I, you know, tried to still enjoy it and just be happy about the people that were there sharing it with me. But, you know, it was hard. And so you guys being honest about how it happened to you as well was really helpful, because I was over here thinking you guys had like the dream wedding with no drama and like everybody showing up for you and being envious of that. And so knowing that you guys had kind of a shared experience really did help me feel better. So I just wanted to say thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that experience. And I'm so happy for you. Congratulations. Like, welcome to the Married Club. And thank you again for being your awesome selves and doing this podcast. And I wish you well, and I can't wait to listen to the rest of the season. All right. Bye.
Stella, I'm so glad you called and left a message.
And we remember meeting you.
Yeah, I remember Stella.
Oh, fuck yeah, I do.
Yes. And
I remembered her first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm like, congratulations on your wedding.
Yes, huge and all congratulations.
Of that. And I'm also sorry that you experienced a little bit of the, you know, emotional turbulence as well.
Yes.
But I think I'm learning that it really does come with the territory of weddings.
Yes, like no matter what. Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting.
There's always something.
Yep. There's going to be somebody who's going to be the sticker burr in your boot, as we say down in Texas. Nobody, I don't think anybody says that.
That was cute though, honey.
You liked
I
it?
Like that one. We'll use it. But I think this really got my wheels turning, because I was like, oh, there is, I mean, everything that we've posted is like this was only perfect.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think,
aside from like bitching on the podcast.
Besides the podcast.
Yeah.
But I think that was, it was a good release valve. And I feel like the podcast has really served us in this way.
Yes, I agree.
Like, the ability to be like fully authentic. You
yeah.
know what I mean? To be like our full selves. Like yeah. I really do feel like my full self on the pod.
I do too.
And I don't feel that way online.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, there's no nuance.
Yeah, that's interesting,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess it's because people really have to go out of their way. Not really, but like have to go out of their way to choose to listen.
Oh my God. You know what I mean? It's a big investment of time.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people, by the way, like IRL, who will be like, I'm so sorry. I'm just like really behind on the podcast. I'm like, holy shit. You know, it's not like a requirement of being friends with me. Like, oh my yeah. God, please don't listen to it. Like, that's yeah. fine.
Yeah. And I also prefer it if people, not prefer
oh, yeah.
it,
the but closer like, people are to me, weirdly, even though yeah. I do feel like I'm being my authentic self, but I just don't want anyone to feel obligated.
Yes.
And also I'm like, I, you know, if it's people that we know, I'm like, I'll talk to you about, you know, if there's something going on, I'll update you.
Yeah.
That sort of
and,
thing.
And it feel like it is exciting to be able to tell people in real life, like, yeah. in real life, like, what's going on. But I also get it. Like, when I first started performing my own songs and poetry, like, I was telling audience members more stuff about my life than my own family knew.
Oh, you wow, know? Yeah.
And so I think it was difficult once stuff started coming out or when I would share things about my life. My mom would be like, I didn't know this.
Right.
I didn't know yeah. that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is, I'm getting new information, you know? So yeah. I wonder if that's, it's a similar experience.
Yeah. Or like, shit, like my, I noticed, so you posted that video earlier, that reel of me in a Santa suit playing Bob Dylan. And my mom commented on it and you know, and there's like five comments on it. So one of them like really stands out, like an individual comment and five yeah. within five comments stands out. So my mom commented and was like, she just delights me more every single day.
Oh.
And I'm like, but as I've talked about before, it's not necessarily my own feelings about it. It's like, now I feel like I'm standing there naked being like, It's a weird, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, people yeah. might feel like they need to say something and I feel like I need to say something and I'm worried that somebody's just going to like, you know, correct her and be real biting about it or like, I don't know. So wow. even in that kind of engagement, like, and that's essentially a family issue,
you know, being sort of like worked out in real time, but I'm like conscious of how everybody perceives the situation.
Yeah.
Please don't feel bad about it.
This is exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And I want it to be clear, like, it is not like eating me up inside. It's not like where I'm like, oh, fuck, my mom misgendered me. It's not that reaction. It's like that it's playing out in this public forum. And I don't want you to apologize. Yeah. I actually find it to be sort of an interesting experiment.
Yes.
And if I were upset about it, I would not bring it up for the first time in the middle of the podcast. Yeah. I would be like, hey, honey, we need to talk, you know? But, I think that's another example where, like, I'm super conscious of, you know, even if nobody even notices it, mm-hmm. I'm still conscious of it being there and being public and, you know, but, yeah, I just, and I know, I feel like we're kind of drifting a little bit from what Stella's was
talking about. No, I mean, this is the whole point, right?
Yeah.
To, like, have launching off.
That's true.
Things.
Yeah.
Like, and I completely, completely understand. Like, there will be times when, like, if I'm posting something about, like, you know, fat positivity and someone says something that to me is not overtly fat phobic, but is definitely, like, diet culture related, you know, as long as you're healthy or something. And I just, like, I don't have it in me to, like, point out why that's wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, but I'm like, I know that it requires, like, the labor of other people to do so.
Right. And also, like, you're complicit if you're not taking action on it.
Yes.
Like, because it's happening on your doorstep.
Right. So, like, that's what I feel like.
No wonder you don't want to post. I mean, like, I think also you're in the, you know, you have, like, a lot more eyeballs on what you're doing.
Yeah.
And a lot fewer.
I mean, sometimes.
But, like, the ratio of, like, the number of people that you know in real life versus that you don't know in real mm-hmm. life is, like, that's a much bigger, smaller, fuck. I don't know how ratios work. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, for most normal people, like, everybody that follows them knows them. And they can clarify and explain. And,
right. That's true.
You know.
Yes. Yeah, but I just, I want people to know that there are issues. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, that we have issues and that I go through shit. I feel
and
like
we're sorry that Stella went through shit. Like, that's fucking lame.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't want any of y'all to think that, like, everything, like, it's always amazing. But in a lot of ways, it really is.
Yeah.
Like, there are amazing things. Like, there are so, I feel like our relationship is one of those things that I feel like is just,
I feel like one thing I have learned, I told somebody this a few years ago. I think the one thing that I've learned through my relationship with you, because prior to my relationship with you, I didn't get to know, like, people who were in the public eye, who, like, you know, the public had some perception of. Like, I didn't really have that experience. Not people I really knew. But so now that I am in a relationship with you and you have, there, people have a public perception of you. And I feel like I've met a bunch of people who are, like, exquisitely in the public eye. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm thinking about, like, our, you know, like, our dear friend Tess Holiday. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking about, like fuck. I mean, she has to deal with more shit online than probably anybody I know or will ever know.
Yeah.
But, and also, like, has, like, a lot of people who, like, don't give her a lot of shit online. Like, she's rightfully, you know, like, really deeply admired and fucking rad. I don't want to say she's, like, defined by people being awful to her. But, just a lot of people are awful. But one thing I've learned, and I mean this as, like, a positive thing. I mean this as a really good thing, is, like, all these people are just people. Like, when I've met them, I'm like, they're not, they're just people who have, like, every other fucking problem that every other person has.
Yes.
And it's, like, It's really different than what I thought it was, like, you know? And so I think it wasn't that I was like, oh, people are flawed. It's different than that. It's like the way that as you get older, you realize, like, your parents were just people. It's like that kind of thing.
Totally.
And being in the public eye is not, like, some spooky supernatural thing. I mean, there are lots of people, like, if you look over the course of history, there are lots of people who've lived in the public eye.
Yeah,
so it's not like a super weird, like, totally abnormal thing. And, like, everybody lives in the public eye to some extent. It's just, like, how large that sphere is.
Yes.
So anyway, I guess what I mean to say is that, like, it's all relative.
Yeah.
And any problems that can happen at, you know, at the level of, like, anybody listening,
totally,
you know, like, that shit all happens. Like, you're not insulated from it, you know? I think only, like, people who are, like, mega, mega, mega fucking rich and powerful are, like, actually, you know, I have no idea what's going on there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Totally. One thing that...
Does that make any sense? Was I just saying made any sense?
Okay. Absolutely. One thing that surprised me about, like, meeting other people in the public eye was, like, I was like, oh, you're... Not everybody, but just, like, I would meet people and be like, this is boring. Like, you're kind
exactly.
of boring.
Yes.
And
yeah.
like, oh, there are boring people that are considered exemplary.
Absolutely.
You know? And, like, And there are bad people yeah. that are in positions of power.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, people that are, you know, are compulsive liars yeah, yeah. in the public eye.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
The other thing that I think about, I'm like, oh, there are people who are, you know, famous that have money issues. And I was like, this also made me think of, like, we didn't talk about our financial issues on the podcast. Like, because,
no.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I think you want to be, like, selective about what you share. But, like, that was another part of the wedding stress was, like, how, like, the financial, like, burden that,
oh, y'all.
That I mean,
yeah.
But it was also, like, this was all of our own volition.
Yeah.
You know?
It wasn't like, yeah, we put ourselves in that position. So, totally. And obviously for a bunch of reasons, we're not going to talk about that. But, like, yeah, I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's actually a really good example.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also there's an added element of it of, like, you know, the fact that we have a Patreon for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And so we're always kind of, you know, there's some tiptoeing around that where it's like, we don't want to like invoke the topic of finances enough to, you know,
influence
people's feelings about it. Exactly.
Totally.
So it's a tricky line, you know?
Totally. Well, and I think that's how I felt about, you know, once I became independent and left Capital and I started doing, like, crowdfunding for my projects. And, you know, I think I did it I've done it three times, but twice since I've been out of, since I left the label. And there's this feeling of, like, I want people to know that I'm successful and that, you know, I can afford to do X, Y, and Z. And there is, like, this feeling of, like, really wanting to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
And then there's also the element of, like, but not enough that you won't, because this yeah. only works because of this thing.
Right.
And, like, I'm okay enough, but I'm not okay enough to where I can, like, fully support this, you know, project I want to do or something.
Yes,
or
right. Like, yeah, exactly.
Or like just do this willy-nilly.
Yeah.
But it is... So I think that's really a challenge with people in, like, I think the gig economy and then also that are, you know, independent artists.
That was a perfect fart and perfect timing. Sorry. I don't know what I ate.
Pizza.
Oh, yeah.
It was good.
It was. But I think it's the lingering effects of the tofu scramble. I guess that wouldn't make any sense. That was a really long time ago. But anyway, thank you, Stella, for leaving that voice
yes,
for us.
Yes, absolutely. And what an interesting jumping off point, too.
Honestly.
Honey, are you obsessed with anything?
Are we doing obsessions anymore?
I know we're not, like, formally.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I'm just, like, you know. If you want to think about it for a second... Because
I guess just the book I'm reading. Mm. I'm really enjoying this book about Ted Kennedy. So I've been going down, like, some Ted Kennedy rabbit holes. But other than that, that's just cool. Kind of trying to get through the end of the semester, you know?
Yeah. You're close to the end,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
I'm so excited for you.
Yep, yep. I am too. Tomorrow's going to be the... Well, no, never mind. I was going to say it's the last day I'm going to have to wake up at 6 in the morning for a while, but that's not true. Because another gig that I'm doing rolls on. But yeah, so just mm-hmm. the end of the semester. How about you?
Well, I finally had time to decorate the house.
Oh, yes, and you did a wonderful job.
And a couple weeks ago, you brought home an inflatable Christmas dog.
Yes.
And it is now, like, a part of our life.
Yes.
And I just love it so much. So I'm obsessed with the...
I'm so glad you like it. I love it, too. I mean, yeah. You put them out there mm-hmm. in addition to our other Christmas decorations. Mm-hmm. It looks fabulous. I think it's going to be the talk of the town.
I'm really happy about it.
Me, too.
Do you want to read a poem?
Yes, I'd love to. Okay. Do you want to read yours first?
Sure.
Absolutely. You go for it. Please, babe.
This is a poem by Erica Meitner from her book Useful Junk, and it just got here today, and I'm excited to read the whole thing. This was from a preview, and I am obsessed with it.
It's called I Would Like to Be the You in Someone's Poem. I would like to be the you in someone's poem so I can say I'm not even kidding. They're playing Those Were the Days by Mary Hopkin on the Kroger sound system. And that song reminds me of my dead grandmother and the way she'd sing the die-die-die bits in her Yiddish accent at joyful family events. And here I am getting a little misty at the register. I would like to be the you in someone's poem so I could also explain that when I got back into my car with groceries, the radio was playing Footloose by Kenny Loggins, and I immediately thought of Laurie Singer and her dangerous red cowboy boots and the way dancing can lead to fucking, according to every small town preacher on film. But really, I would like to be the you in your poem, especially if there's a car on fire, we can rubberneck on a bus trip through an unspecified city, or maybe a rooftop bar with cocktails that always have one mysterious ingredient requiring inquiry like Elixir Novosalis or Punta Mes. Especially if I'm in a parking lot at night, at one supermarket or another, again, sitting in the driver's seat of my car typing intermittent messages to you in your poem. The messages say wonder and oh say can you see. They say put me in your fictional poem because we are all fictions. Because the way the hot driveway feels on my bare feet when I go get the mail at 5 p.m. is not real. Not the walking or the heat stored up all day then emitted from cement or the paper in my hands addressed to me. Because the way I open the box twice to make sure I haven't missed something exciting is also not real. Once there was a spider's nest in there, plump with eggs, and another time the rain got in and smudged the name of the renter still taped to the bottom and X'd out in ballpoint. X me out of your poem once you put me in. Draw a line through my name or disguise it as part of our country. Oh, America, you never fail to disappoint me. Your choice in leaders, your ignorance, your racism, your crescent moon tonight, low and bright over the Appalachians. There are many wrong things in this world, and nothing is not complicated, but just once, I want a poem to have second person me in it and come from somewhere else, be generated by a machine I have nothing to do with. There's a breeze out on the stoop tonight at dusk. But I don't really know this as I'm otherwise occupied in your poem doing something I don't yet know about, like watching the neighbor kid setting off pink fireworks at the end of his driveway, the shower of sparks and purple stars at the end, cracking the dark wide open, then vanishing.
Ooh! I love the sensory details.
Me too. It felt really prosy too, and I'm just into it right now.
Yeah. I love the hot driveway underfoot.
Yeah.
That's really pretty. Thanks for sharing that one.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a poem by Cindy Juyong Ok, and it's called Terms and Conditions. You call me Ho. It's short for home. A cockroach falls from a chandelier, and my bodega loyalty fluctuates in pace with the funeral's bloody nose. I've been eating trees my whole life, which usually made me more patient but more cruel. Recently, I stood on a porch that wraps around that nest, the house that used me. Any noise can be a curse to a child of chaos. Silent hallways from gothic novels to twilight wind and fire songs. The unlucky to not even be an architect and to be inundated with the prose of it all. We were daughters spent when we all hoped for sums. You call out ha, it's short for harvest. To be a child is to gather secrets, an elder to risk and translate. Once, when I was recovering, covering again myself, I confused sharing for stealing, read murder into shadows until laughter came from silhouettes. We've since phased, piano bleaching the scene, becoming the fog and the pulp. You name me ma, I know it means mine.
Wow, what a story.
Isn't that a pretty poem?
Yeah, it really is.
I think so, too. There's something really, like confrontational about it.
Yes.
Or something. Maybe that's not the word I want, but, yeah, I really like it.
I also really like it, even though when, like, some writing can be really overwrought.
Yeah.
Like, there is something really special about knowing that someone took that much time to craft something.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, like,
even because it didn't feel overwrought, but it reminds me of some things that are where I'm like,
yeah, right.
I'm like,
it's technical. Yeah.
You spent so much time with this and that makes me feel special.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I agree.
I feel special reading it.
Yeah. It's like looking at somebody who's like carved a bunch of really tiny little figurines where you're like,
yeah,
how special that must have taken fucking forever. And you spent the time on that and I get to see it now.
Totally.
Well,
wow.
I think we did it.
I think so too.
Another one in the fucking books.
What a wonderful episode.
Call us.
Yeah.
Please.
That was so much fun.
919-901-0861 fun.
Yeah. Let us know what you think about AI art or sound lying.
Off. Yeah, or lying or AI art or
social media
in the comments below. Yeah. Love y'all.
Bye.